majority of the students, almost instinctually. Coach George loved the sound of that chorus. It meant he was forging order from the chaos.
"Excellent! Castillo and Reed, pair up! Foster and Dixon! Riley and Wells! Reynolds and DeSoto!"
Coach said, rambling off the names. He read quickly, leaving no doubt in his students' minds that they were expected to move with just as much speed. There was a scramble as the students searched through somewhat familiar faces, trying to find their opponent and get inside a circle as rapidly as their bodies would permit. Before long, Coach George had reached the end.
"Sullivan, grab Hawkins when she's done with her push-ups. Lastly, Daniels and Taylor, report to me,"
Coach George finished. Roy and Chad looked at each other with some confusion, but neither had any more idea of why they'd been singled out than the other.
"Okay, everyone, you have 5 minutes before your circles glow. Shake hands, stretch, pray, or do whatever revs you up before a fight. I'll be here watching when it starts, so make sure you come out swinging,"
Coach George instructed them. He then turned his attention to Roy and Chad.
"You two follow me. I have a special place for you to fight." "Here's the deal,"
Coach George said once they had arrived at an even lower level. This one was as bare as the last, though on the ground were a series of red rings, each one within the last, until the final ring that was only 5 feet across.
"You two are now permanent training buddies. Shake hands, make nice, and find peace with it."
"Works for me," Roy said with a grin. "But why am I the only one who gets to pound on Blondie?"
"Because, dumbass, you have to use your powers when you train. It doesn't do Roy any good if Herschel is the one learning the lessons,"
Coach George explained.
"And Taylor here has remodeled his whole body from the ground up. He can't really just turn that shit on and off in the blink of an eye. It works out, though, because you're both strong enough to ring each other's bells."
"I don't feel this will be adequate training for me," Chad said. "He doesn't offer me a significant challenge or the opportunity for learning."
"Try letting him smash you in the face and work on your pain tolerance,"
Coach George snapped at him.
"It's what we've got to work with, so I suggest you find a way to get some gain from it."
"I'll do my best," Chad replied.
"Goody for you. Now, you two are going to start in the smallest circle. I have to be back upstairs to watch the others, so I'll review tapes of your training at night. When I think the time is right, we'll move you to the bigger circles."
"Oh, why bother with that bullshit?"
Roy complained.
"Because, given enough room to move around, Taylor would utterly crush you at your current skill level, like he did a few months ago. At least in close proximity, you stand a chance of hitting a lucky blow,"
Coach George told him. Roy thought about yapping off again, then reconsidered. He really couldn't have asked for better circumstances. He was training against the strongest guy in class every single day. There was no better way for him to improve than this.
"Fine. I guess it'll do," Roy said, walking toward the center circle.
"It's Shane, right?" Vince asked, as he and his opponent stared at each other from within their circle.
"Right. And you're Vince, the guy who can absorb energy,"
Shane replied. "Bingo.
Nice ability. Not to mention you must have some exceptional combat skills,"
Shane continued.
"Thanks, I think. What makes you say that, though?"
"You were beaten in the first round, but you still made 8th rank. You fended off Michael multiple times despite his presence in the top 3. And then, of course, there's the fact that you're fighting me,"
Shane explained.
"I take it you're good too, then," Vince said, catching his meaning immediately.
"If not for the experience of fighting Chad, I would have thought myself easily the best in our year,"
Shane told him.
I have heard he's pretty talented, Vince said.
Talent has nothing to do with it. Chad Taylor is a man possessed. I've been working to be a hero since I was a small child. I've been instructed in various forms of martial arts and had the opportunity to hone my power to a level of refinement it would take others in this class years to match. And I still cannot match the intensity with which Chad trains for battle, Shane said. He lives and breathes it. His free time is spent thinking of new strategies and techniques. Even when he's resting, he trains new reflex sequences into his muscles. It is literally his entire life.
Wow. That's amazing, Vince said. And kinda sad. I mean, there's more to life than just fighting.
Perhaps. But he is the best, and we are not. So maybe we're the ones who've taken a wrong turn, Shane pointed out.
Vince would have said more, but the soft hum from behind him was the only warning he got that the circle was beginning to glow.
Good luck, Vince said.
Move swiftly and surely, Shane replied.
The first clash lasted only seconds. Before Roy could even blink, Chad had drilled him in the ribs and knocked him on his back. He didn't press the attack, surprisingly. Instead, he took a few steps back and allowed Roy to climb to his feet.
Thanks, Roy said as he rose. But you didn't have to do that.
Kicking you mercilessly while you lie on the ground isn't really a great learning experience for either of us, Chad said.
True,
Roy agreed, rushing him. Chad slid out of the way with ease, catching Roy's shoulder and putting him right back on the ground. Roy pulled himself up again.
Listen, I don't do this often, but something's been bugging me, Roy said once he was up.
This time, Chad stepped forward and caught Roy in the sternum, sweeping out his legs at the same time.
What's that?
Chad asked as he looked down.
I wanted to say I'm sorry,
Roy replied, rubbing his chest as he got on his feet.
I'm sorry I insulted your power before. I still think mine is stronger, but I'll admit, yours is a lot more impressive than I would have guessed.
Chad closed the gap between them and punched Roy in the jaw. As Roy's head reeled to the side, Chad grabbed his right arm and hurled him over his shoulder. This time, he didn't just land on the ground. He was slammed there with an impact that left concrete chips on his shirt.
Apology accepted, Chad said in his usual even tone.
Vince and Shane were both dripping in sweat as they gasped for air, circling one another.
You're better than I expected,
Shane complimented him.
You too,
Vince agreed. Each boy was covered in small gashes and bruises. They'd put each other down several times and taken the fight to the concrete more than once, but neither had managed to get so much of an advantage that he could own the day. Plus, they had been unable to drive each other out of the ring even a single time.
You look tired, Vince told him.
You look exhausted,
Shane replied.
I think the others are about out of gas,
Vince noted, watching the lackluster battles around the room. It might not have been so bad if they hadn't done the usual 2 hours of hard training before this part of class.
That your way of asking me if we can softball it till the clock runs out?
Not in the slightest,
Vince replied. He dashed forward, sweeping at Shane's legs. Shane stepped back on his right foot, bringing his left swinging for Vince's head. Vince moved his whole body with the blow, doing a half flip only a few inches above the ground and driving his legs into Shane's chest. Shane stumbled back, but managed to drop to his knees before the momentum could send him sailing out of the ring, and both boys scrambled to get to their feet.
Not bad,
Vince said to Shane, as they both sucked in air.
I was thinking the same thing,
Shane replied.
You've gotten better since last time,
Chad told Roy, as Roy dragged himself from the ground.
I get better hang time in the air?
No, you're thinking when you come at me now. And your reflexes have improved. Not much, but some. You've been learning some martial arts,
Chad said.
Guilty,
Roy replied, swaying slightly.
Lot of good it's done me.
He hadn't landed a blow on Chad yet, and Chad was hammering away at him every time they came together. Roy was resistant to damage, of course. However, Chad dished out enough to cover that gap and more. In truth, Roy knew the only reason he was still conscious was simply because Chad didn't want to knock him out, and that knowledge made him want to crush the blonde bastard even harder.
It's a process. You should keep that in mind. Steady groundwork is what bears results,
Chad told him.
I'll make sure to remember,
Roy replied, stumbling forward. He was too slow. He knew it as soon as he was moving. Chad would capitalize. Sure enough, rather than use a quick series of blows to knock Roy down, Chad instead took a step forward and smashed him in the forehead with a powerful kick. Roy saw static all around him, and when his vision finally cleared, he was on the ground again. It was beginning to have a familiar, almost homey feel.
Just stay down already, Chad told him. I'll go fetch a healer, and we can tell Coach George that this won't work, because you can't keep up with me. By this time tomorrow, we'll both have people more appropriate to our skill level.
Fuck you,
Roy spat out, along with a bit of blood.
I beg your pardon. I was trying to show you mercy.
You were trying to show me condescension,
Roy sneered, getting up for what felt like the billionth agonizing time.
Yeah, you're faster than I am, and more skilled than I am, and a hell of a lot better practiced than I am. But who cares?
Offhandedly, I'd say your battered body. Don't get the wrong idea here, Roy. I've been going easy on you. This can get much worse.
Blondie, there's a few things you should know about me,
Roy said as he found his shaky footing.
I love whiskey, dumb blondes, and my mama. I don't welch on bets, and I don't cheat at pool. And I never, repeat, never give up.
Roy locked eyes with Chad and gave him the legendary Daniels family grin.
Now bring it the fuck on.
To his credit, Roy stayed conscious for the rest of the fight, even if a part of him truly wished he hadn't. 86.
Yeesh, this guy took one hell of a pounding,
said the healer, a female junior. Roy could make out the words dimly over the ringing in his ears.
That's what she said,
snickered a male voice next to her.
Damn it, Ed, that doesn't even make sense. Try to show a little respect,
the girl snapped at him.
Just because he's passed out doesn't mean you can act like a jackass.
She was wrong. Roy was still awake. He could hear them, after all. It wasn't worth the effort to correct her, though. Not right now.
Sorry,
Ed apologized.
I just get kind of weirded out being too somber around people this messed up. I don't want to treat them like they're already dead or something.
No worries on that for this one. He's already healing up on his own. To be this hardy and still be so pummeled. It must have been one hell of a beating,
the girl commented.
Maybe he wasn't fighting back,
Ed suggested.
No way, the girl told him. Didn't you notice all the impact wounds? This guy kept getting up over and over and getting put right back down. He was obviously outclassed, but I'll give him one thing. He did not want to lose.
Roy's head swam, and he finally lost the tenuous grip on consciousness he had been clutching so adamantly.
Thank you for coming, Mrs. Daniels,
the principal said, rising from his desk and shaking her hand.
Will Mr. Daniels be joining us?
I'm afraid he's out of town at the moment,
Mrs. Daniels said.
His construction company got a job down in Florida that he's overseeing.
Ah, I understand, the principal said. In that case, I suppose we can begin. Please, have a seat.
Not that I'm not eager to find out why you called me down here so urgently, but shouldn't you excuse the student already here before we talk?
Mrs. Daniels asked. She glanced at the small plastic chair he was sitting in, reclined back and feet swinging freely.
I'm afraid that boy is actually part of the reason you were called down,
the principal said hesitantly.
Was he in a fight with my son? I know Herschel has been getting bullied since we moved here.
Not exactly. You see, that boy sitting in that chair is your son. Sort of. I'm afraid it's somewhat complicated, Mrs. Daniels. Are you sure you wouldn't rather have a seat?
Mrs. Daniels didn't take the open chair. Instead, she walked over to the small boy and got on her knees. She looked him in the eye for a long time, long enough that the boy began to squirm uncomfortably.
What's your name?
Dunno,
the boy replied.
Do you know who I am?
Mommy,
the boy replied.
Are you Herschel?
She asked. The boy shook his head.
Herschel was crying because they kept making fun of him. He couldn't make them stop, so I did.
For the record, stopping them consisted of several children with extensive bruising and an overturned jungle gym.
The principal interjected.
Is that true? Did you hurt the other children?
The boy looked down at the floor.
It was an accident. They wouldn't stop making Herschel cry. I just wanted to stop them.
I understand. Well, we'll have to get you some help in learning to stop people without hurting them,
Mrs. Daniels said, giving the boy a reassuring squeeze of his hand, then standing up to her full height.
I must say, Mrs. Daniels, you're taking this all very well,
the principal commented.
My aunt was a super, so I've always known it might run in our blood,
Mrs. Daniels lied.
I'm afraid you must know that until Herschel can control his powers more effectively, he won't be able to attend our facility anymore,
the principal said hesitantly.
Of course,
Mrs. Daniels agreed.
I fully intend to get my son, or perhaps I should say sons, the education they need to become happy, integrated supers.
Sons? Mrs. Daniels, that boy is still Herschel. It's just him utilizing his abilities,
the principal told her. This time, it was Mrs. Daniels who shook her head.
That boy isn't Herschel, she said matter-of-factly, but he is definitely my son.
She looked back at the boy and smiled at him.
On that note, I suppose we should find a good name for you.
Mrs. Daniels, I don't think you...
Roy was jerked awake by a coughing fit. He hacked and thundered for several minutes before lying back down on the table.
"Sorry about that, big guy,"
said the girl in a soft, comforting voice.
"It's a side effect of when we heal around the lungs."
Roy heard her and understood. He didn't care, though. Now that he'd tasted sleep, he wasn't ready to stop gorging on it just yet. He could hear her crying again through the walls. She would only do it when she thought he was outside, and even then, only into a pillow to muffle the sound. It wasn't muffled quite enough. She was crying so often these days because she missed him. Roy's fists clenched involuntarily. He got so mad whenever he thought about his dad. Mad at him for leaving, and mad at himself for missing him. Last week, Roy had finally managed to lift a pickup truck in the junkyard where he and his dad used to work out. His first instinct had been to run and proudly tell his father of the accomplishment. Then Roy had remembered.
"He has some things to work out,"
his mother had told him, choking back her own sadness.
"Things he needs space for."
Roy forced himself to let his hands loosen. It didn't make any sense. His dad had always said a man lived up to his responsibilities. He took care of those in need. He helped the weak. But he could walk out on his own family like it was nothing? Roy steadied himself. She needed him to be strong right now. Besides, Roy already had a plan. He'd find that son of a bitch one day and ask him in person why he'd walked out. And if he didn't have the world's best answer, Roy was going to beat him mercilessly. That was later, though. His dad was still the better fighter between them. For now. He knocked gently on the door.
"Mom," he called. "Are you okay?" "Looks like he'll be fine," the girl said.
"Glad to hear it,"
Coach George's gruff voice said, echoing through the room.
"Good thing he's hardy,"
Ed said.
"I can't imagine what he did to deserve a beating like he got."
"He's tenacious," Coach George said. "More so than I was expecting, to be honest. When I paired him with Taylor, I figured it would be his last day in the program."
"Looks like he surprised you," the girl said.
"That he did," Coach George admitted. "But there's always tomorrow."
Roy wasn't sure what to feel. Rage? Betrayal? Mostly it was just confusion, but the other two were percolating there as well. He sat silently in his bus seat, staring out the window and trying hard not to think. He could feel the stares of some of the other passengers. A 13-year-old boy traveling alone tended to attract attention, after all. On the way out here, he'd felt self-conscious about that fact. Now, he didn't give two shits what people were thinking about him. All these years, he'd dreamed of the day he confronted his father. All these years, he'd trained and worked and sweat for the sake of being better than him. He'd spent days tracking him down, and then, when he finally found him... Roy shook his head. He couldn't deal with it, couldn't see his dad that way. But the image was there, festering in the back of his mind, unwilling to purge itself despite all his efforts. Roy felt Herschel stirring within him. They'd been switching even more erratically than normal lately. It was possible stress was a factor in their condition. Roy didn't care at the moment. Right now, he just wanted to be alone. Truly alone. Not just one half of a whole. He was barely holding it together as it was. And now, he realized, he had his little brother to worry about, too. It was just too much.
"Simmer down, fatso,"
Roy whispered hotly under his breath.
"Nobody fucking wants you here right now."
87. Roy was surprised to open his eyes. He'd thought Herschel would have taken over by now. Slowly, he pulled himself to a sitting position and looked around. He was still in the resting room where the healers worked.
"Careful," Mary cautioned. "You're all patched up, but you might be woozy for a while."
She was sitting in a chair a few feet away. There were several books with her, one cracked open in her lap.
"What are you doing here?"
Roy asked, a twinge of harshness in his voice.
"I was keeping watch. I wanted to make sure you were okay,"
Mary said.
"So kind of you,"
Roy snapped.
"I'll tell Herschel you cared. You can run along now."
"I don't think you understand. I was here checking on you, on Roy. I heard what happened,"
Mary explained.
"That I got my ass kicked? Come on. I'm not really a delicate flower, and we have healers on call at all times. There was literally nothing to worry about."
Roy scoffed, swinging his feet over the edge of the bed and standing up. Mary shook her head.
"Not the fight. I heard what happened after."
"What do you mean?"
"The memories."
Roy felt himself become very still.
"You listened to those?"
"Not intentionally, no. They were the psychic equivalent of throat-tearing screams, though. They overwhelmed everything around me. They seemed intense,"
Mary said. Roy tried to calm himself, a task made more difficult by the same memory dreams they were discussing.
"Shit happens,"
Roy said.
"No sense dwelling on it. I'm fine."
"No, you're not,"
Mary disagreed.
"You're harboring a lot of anger inside. I think that's why you lashed out at so much of the world and distanced yourself. It's all anger you feel toward your father."
She was cut off by the crashing sound of Roy's bed being slammed to the ground, courtesy of Roy's fist.
"You and I are not friends,"
Roy said coldly.
"You want to bet against me, and I'm honoring the deal. That's it. I do not need or want or care about your advice. And if you ever mention my father again, then all bets are off between us. Understood?"
Mary nodded slowly.
"That's fair, I suppose. To me, and maybe to you. But certainly not to Herschel. I guess that's between brothers, though."
She reached down and began scooping up her books.
"One thing I should point out. I don't know what you went through."
"No argument here,"
Roy said.
"But that doesn't mean nobody here does. If you were to talk to people a little more, you might find others you could share the burden with."
"Please. I talk to more people than any of you social rejects."
"No, you don't. You slap hands, you exchange drinks, you have a few laughs. You don't talk to anyone. You don't bond with anyone. And you don't connect with anyone."
Mary told him.
"I'm connecting all over the place,"
Roy shot back. Mary finished gathering her books and stood up from the chair.
"Of course you are. That's why this room is so stuffed with people who wanted to make sure you were okay,"
Mary said, turning on her heel and heading out the door. Roy looked around at the empty room and the broken bed. He tried to think of a joke he could make about breaking the bed, preferably one that implied he had tremendous genitalia. Nothing really came to mind. Instead, he found his shoes and walked out a different door. Roy! Roy was only a few feet down the hallway, headed back to the lifts, when a familiar voice called to him. He looked over his shoulder to see none other than the man who had just beaten him senseless jogging up to him.
"Hello, Chad,"
Roy greeted hesitantly.
"Hello," Chad replied. "I see you're moving around again."
"I'm a quick heel," Roy replied.
"I'm sure," Chad said. "I wanted to talk to you about today."
"Was there something left unsaid by our fists?"
"Actually, yes. At least on my end," Chad said. "I was thinking about our fight while you were getting healed. Specifically, about how hopelessly out of your league you are when you fight me. Yet you continued to try."
"Gee, thanks. But I kinda already got the memo that I suck compared to you,"
Roy said.
"You do, but that isn't the point. The point is that you kept coming at me. You kept trying, no matter how hard I put you down. I realized that the kind of man who can withstand the punishment I'm capable of dishing out, and then ask for more, is a man with a lot of determination."
"Well, yeah, actually,"
Roy agreed.
"I can relate with that sort of mindset," Chad said. "So I came to a conclusion. I won't improve at all by fighting you. You, on the other hand, will improve tremendously if you can continue to fight like you did today. And in the grand scheme of things, 1 hour per day helping a similar individual reach their goal is something I can tolerate."
"I guess you're saying you want to stay sparring partners?"
Roy surmised.
"Yes. I'll keep entering the ring with you for as long as Coach George deems necessary. That is, of course, on the condition that your dedication and intensity do not drop," Chad explained.
"That part you don't need to worry about,"
Roy said.
"And, thanks, I guess."
"Glad to help,"
Chad replied. He turned and began to walk away.
"Hey, Chad,"
Roy called out.
"Yes?"
"You said you got the same power as your dad. Is he a hero?"
Chad nodded without looking back.
"He was one of the greatest heroes ever to live."
"Why?"
"Just curious, I guess,"
Roy lied.
"You're a strong guy. I thought someone else with your power would have been a pretty famous hero if he was in the business."
"He is still very famous. Just not for the reasons he deserves," Chad said. "I'll see you tomorrow, Roy."
"See you then,"
Roy told Chad's exiting form.
See? He could connect with people. What the hell did Mary know anyway?
88. As the days slipped by, even something as strange as a daily bare-knuckle brawl became little more than a piece of routine for the combat students. But the alternative training course posed different challenges. It was a mishmash of light sparring, discussion, and mind exercises. These challenges, presented by Coach Persephone, could be as simple as a riddle, or as complex as an intricate battle scenario where one was expected to provide a step-by-step plan for victory. The riddles were, on the whole, considered the more popular task. They, too, settled into a rhythm, and soon spring was beginning to slip subtle touches onto the landscape. It was a flower here, a green patch of grass there, things that showed winter was losing its stronghold on the terrain. Of course, some signs were less subtle than others. Freshman River Trip, March 18th to March 22nd. Final sign-up date, February 2nd. Vince read from the flyer posted on the door to Dean Blaine's classroom. He turned and looked at some of the other students who had pooled behind him. "Anyone know what this is?"
"My sister told me about it,"
Shane volunteered.
"It's a big event during spring break for the freshman class. They provide transportation, tents, and tubes for us to float the river on."
Vince shuddered involuntarily. Ever since the mountain, he'd gotten a spike of cold every time he thought about camping.
"Apparently, it's also tradition for the sophomores chaperoning to bring tons of beer and liquor, so that the whole weekend is quite the celebratory event,"
Shane continued. "Great," Vince said, unenthusiastically. That made it sound even less fun. There was nothing that seemed even remotely appealing about this trip.
"Hells yeah. I'm putting our names at the top of the list,"
Sasha said, stepping forward and plucking a pen from her bag.
"About time we get to have some fun. I'm still kicking myself for missing that sophomore party last semester."
Vince considered trying to stop her, then thought better of it. He wasn't exactly experienced at relationships, but he knew enough not to try and deprive his girlfriend of something she would view as ample fun. Besides, no one was going to force him to drink. He could go and just enjoy the company.
"Rock on," Nick said, sidling up to him. "Okay, Vince, this is it. This river trip, I am seeing you finally unwind. You, good sir, will try drinking. No arguments, because every time you open your mouth to say no, I'm cramming a shot down it."
Vince supposed a couple would be okay. It was a new experience and all. Besides, they'd be out in nature, along with heaven only knew how many other college kids on spring break. It might be nice to blend in for a bit and get away from all the Lander uniqueness.
"I heard about this thing," Gilbert said, adding his own name to the list. "Don't they have a deal with some landowner, so we're the only ones on that river? No worrying about anyone seeing us use our powers."
Vince was... well, Vince was pretty much just thinking, "Damn it," over and over and over.
"All right, class, get inside," Dean Blaine said from within the room. "The sheet will be there for at least a week. I assure you, a chance will be had by all to sign up."
There was some grumbling, but they all piled in and took their seats.
"Settle down, class," Dean Blaine told them. "I know you're all excited about this weekend, but try to keep it under control. It's only Tuesday, after all."
There were several exchanged glances of curiosity, followed by a multitude of shrugs admitting ignorance. Julia raised her hand.
"Yes, Miss Shaw?"
"What's this weekend?"
"Tisk tisk, Miss Shaw. I would have expected you to pay at least some attention to the Lander event calendar. Would anyone care to inform Miss Shaw of what she has forgotten?"
He was met by vacant eyes and silence. The few in the class who did know the weekend's significance didn't dare proclaim it, for fear of being judged as looking forward to it. Which they, in truth, were.
"I must say, I'm disappointed. Over 30 of you here, and not one person knows what this weekend is. It's Parents' Weekend. I'd have thought you'd all have it marked on your calendars,"
Dean Blaine said, barely hiding a chuckle. He was significantly older than his students, but not so old that he'd forgotten the stomach-tightening terror of knowing your parents would be visiting you at college.
"Wait, you mean our parents?"
Stella said, slowly circling the answer she didn't want to hear.
Your parents were all sent invitations inviting them to a weekend of fun and mingling here at Lander. They'll be allowed to tour the faculty, join in some parent-child social events, or just wander the campus meeting your friends and professors, Dean Blaine explained.
And these invitations, these are already sent out?
Rich asked from the front row.
Indeed. Ever since the year a student attempted to hijack the mail truck, we've made it policy to only remind the students of Parents' Weekend after all the invitations are delivered,
Dean Blaine said, glossing over the whole of the story. In truth, it had been several students who'd gone after the mail truck, but his class didn't need to know that any more than they needed to know how Dean Blaine had such extensive, one could even say first-hand, knowledge of the event.
What time will they be arriving?
Will asked.
Friday afternoon. On that note, you should know that gym will start an hour early, during what would usually be your study period. We want you to have extra time so you can all be cleaned up and ready when your parents arrive.
Some of the students looked sullen, a few looked eager, and most looked downright terrified. It gave Dean Blaine a small sense of comfort, knowing that no matter how powerful a child might be, they could still fear the embarrassment of their parents. Then, he noticed a few faces in the crowd that looked nothing like the others. These were the faces of a few who were trying very hard not to look as sad as they felt. Dean Blaine's amusement swiftly passed.
"Enough of that," he said. "It's time to start class."
89.
"I'm afraid I just don't agree,"
Mr. Numbers said politely, taking a sip of tea to punctuate his sentence.
"I'm not asking for agreement, merely assistance, even if only by association,"
Mr. Transport replied. The two men were taking advantage of the time their charges were occupied in gym to pop out and get lunch at the only place one could find truly delicious Italian food.
"I'll concede that your idea does regain us some of the ground we were forced to sacrifice for the mountain trial. However, I feel it comes off as far too transparent an attempt to do just that,"
Mr. Numbers said.
"If we are seen as actively manipulating their emotions, then it would undermine our efforts, not aid them."
"That argument is only valid if they see it as an act done for the sake of manipulation. If they take it as genuine, then it would do wonders to foster some trust. Trust that would greatly assist us down the line,"
Mr. Transport countered.
"I think the risk is too great against the potential reward,"
Mr. Numbers assessed bluntly.
"The optimum gain is simply too minimal to justify such an overt gesture."
Mr. Transport slowly cut into his manicotti, considering Mr. Numbers's point. It was true that this could work against them. However, it was also true that Mr. Transport still wanted to proceed with the plan, not just for the reasons he'd advocated to Mr. Numbers, but because it was an act of decency he wanted to perform. Mr. Numbers wouldn't accept sentiment in place of logic, though. Mr. Transport thought carefully, then voiced an idea.
"We could get some of them to assist us."
Mr. Numbers merely raised an eyebrow rather than conjure the effort of a vocal reaction.
"It's not without precedent in circumstances such as these. We would need Nick and Mary. The others trust Mary thanks to her ability, and Nick has been shaping their perceptions since the first day. If they agree to aid us, then we significantly reduce risk,"
Mr. Transport said.
"Valid," Mr. Numbers said. "However, working with Nick in itself generates a risk."
Then let's begin with Mary. Broach the topic with her over your next chess game. You can gauge her reaction and decide then if the equation is more adequately balanced.
Very well, Mr. Numbers agreed. Assuming the risk-reward ratio becomes justifiable, I will agree to help you with your project.
Thank you, Mr. Transport said.
Not at all, Mr. Numbers replied. Shall we get dessert?
Sounds delicious. I believe there is an excellent bakery down the street, Mr. Transport suggested.
Perfect, Mr. Numbers agreed. One thing I love about New York, variety is always close at hand.
Because I'm retired, that's why! Dean Blaine yelled into the phone.
He was in his office and had been attempting to unwind from the day. His attempt was clearly unsuccessful, as his face was flushed, and a small vein near his eye was beginning to throb. Dean Blaine prided himself on his unflappable demeanor in dealing with the students. However, the person currently on the line was not enrolled at Lander. Aside from that, there were just some things that got under his skin. There was a murmur of words from the phone.
Save the guilt trip. I've told you people more times than I care to count that I'm done. There are plenty of capable, active heroes out there who can fix your problem. I know that because I trained them. That's what I do now, since you seem to have forgotten.
Another murmur crackled across the lines.
Well, if time is such an issue, then quit wasting it with me and find someone who's willing to help. Good day!
Dean Blaine slammed the receiver down, cracking off a small piece of plastic in the process. He took several deep breaths and got up from his desk. It took him a few moments of rooting through one of the drawers in his file cabinet, but he finally emerged with a small, white bottle. He poured a glass of water, then deposited two tablets from the bottle into the glass and watched as they fizzed enthusiastically. Only after downing the bubbly liquid in a single gulp did he retake his seat. Dean Blaine knew he should take it as a compliment. He'd been retired for nearly a decade, and yet they still called him when things went too far south too fast. No one wanted to accept that he'd retired, even after all this time. Not too shabby for a guy who had barely made it into the HCP to begin with. He had to believe some of the reluctance to let him go was hype, though. After all, he was one of the few graduates still left from his graduating class. The class of legends, people had called it. Globe may have been at the top, but all 10 heroes who came from that class went on to become famous worldwide. Though, admittedly, some gained fame from less than ideal circumstances. He mentally ticked through the class roster. Globe and Intra were dead, of course. Wisp was in prison. Shimmerpath made herself nearly impossible to find. Bullrush had retired and was now in the private sector. Raze was considered wanted and dangerous. His mental accounting stalled on Raze. They had been roommates nearly their whole time at Lander. They'd sparred often, honing their skills against a fellow well-trained opponent. No one had been more surprised than he when word spread about Raze's crimes. Dean Blaine rose from his chair once again, this time heading for the door. He would go watch the juniors' class. It would be going on around now. Seeing the students always centered him. It reminded him of his own days at Lander, years spent fighting, competing, and bonding with fellow supers. A time when he'd lived and trained with his best friends. Sometimes, when he was watching the young ones work toward their goal, he could almost forget what had happened to the rest of his class, could lose himself in that ignorant memory of decades ago. Only almost, though. Wherever his mind let him wander, reality was always just a step behind, waiting to pounce. 90.
"I think you'll like my parents," Sasha said, as she and Vince sat on her couch and flipped through the meager offering of television. "They're pretty chill people on the whole. I was thinking we could all do dinner one night."
"That seems nice," Vince said evenly. He'd never actually had a girlfriend before, so meeting the parents was going to be a new experience for him, one that he hadn't heard the nicest things about.
"Yep. So, what else are you going to do with your downtime? I don't want you to be lonely if everyone is occupied with their parents," Sasha said.
"Nothing to worry about," Vince told her. "Alice and Nick both have single parents that work all the time, so apparently they aren't coming. Herschel's mom is going to be here, though, and so are both of Mary's parents. So, worst-case scenario, I'll be part of a trio for the weekend."
"Long as you save Saturday night for me," Sasha said with a smile. "My parents will love you."
"You think so?"
"Sure, what's not to love? You're a super with an awesome ability, you're smart, you're kind, and pretty darn cute if I do say so myself," Sasha said.
"That's very sweet," Vince said, squirming a little at his own lack of understanding of how to take so many compliments. Instead, he opted to change the subject. "Your parents wanted you with a super, I guess?"
"Like you wouldn't believe. They're convinced that two supers are more likely to pop out super grandbabies," Sasha said. "Which is great for when I'm like 30. But I mean, come on. What teenage girl wants to hear her mom rag on the guy she took to the prom for being an inferior genetic supplier?"
"That does seem a bit odd," Vince agreed.
"They mellowed out after senior year, though," Sasha continued, a devilish grin on her face. "I got them to back off by showing them how much worse it could be."
"What'd you do?"
"I let a powered guy take me out one night. All of a sudden, the normal boys didn't seem so bad," Sasha chuckled. "Since then, they've been way cooler about it all. Sort of a moot point, though, because I wound up with a super boyfriend anyway."
"Yeah, you did," Vince said. He squirmed again, but this time for a very different, uncomfortable reason.
"Good evening, Alice. Have I disturbed your studies?"
"No, everything is fine," Alice replied, moving the recently picked up phone to her right ear. She was sitting at her desk, working through some notes, when her father's ringtone had blared out.
"Excellent to hear. I was calling to inform you that my plane will be arriving Friday afternoon. I will be in town until mid-morning on Saturday,"
Charles Adair told her.
"Wait, you're actually coming in this weekend?"
"Was I unclear?" "Yes, I will be there for a little under a day. I've already gotten my hotel set up for the stay, but I would like to invite you to dinner during my time there. I could pick you up at 6.
"Oh, yeah, that sounds great. I'll see you Friday at 6.
"Excellent. Dress appropriately. Good night, dear."
"Night, Daddy."
Alice set down the phone, trying to suppress the surprise welling up inside of her. Her dad was actually going to fly in specifically to see her for Parents' Weekend. That was downright flabbergasting. She glanced over at her poor, already stuffed to its breaking point closet. When he said to dress appropriately, it meant he was having dinner somewhere extremely high class. This might just call for a whole new outfit. She shoved aside her notes and fired up her computer. She needed to see what times the local stores were open until tomorrow.
I need a favor,
Mary said, plopping down next to Nick on the common room sofa.
Wow, you really don't pussyfoot around, do you?
Nick replied, setting down the book he'd been reading.
Would it do any good?
Mary asked.
Not even a little. So what do you need?
Alice is going to ask me to go shopping with her tomorrow after class. I'm leading a study group that evening, so I can't.
Mary explained.
Wait, back up a second. Did I miss the part where your power lets you see the future?
No, you missed the part where the girl in the room next to me let out a very sharp mental squeal of joy because she found out her father is coming to visit. She started browsing around for stores to buy a dinner outfit at, and then decided she'd prefer to have someone to talk with while she shops.
Mary said.
Okay, see, I think I know where this is going, and I have to tell you, I am really leaning toward no,
Nick said.
In fact, it's less of a lean than it is me standing directly on top of no. Like it's under my feet, the no. I'm saying no, if you didn't get that.
Please, Nick. I think it'll be good for her to have someone to share an excited day with.
Uh-huh, and I'm the natural second choice after you? Nick asked.
Well, no, not really. I think I can talk her into it, though.
Mary replied.
Why me?
Because you two are actually pretty similar. Besides, you know more about modern fashion trends than any other guy in this house.
Mary said.
Damn, you are just awful at this,
Nick told her.
That's why I try to avoid doing it. I can't come up with a better solution, unfortunately. Trust me, I tried.
Nick thought it over for a moment, turning the situation around in his head. Mary was coming to him with a genuine need. That wasn't a situation he should outright dismiss.
I don't do favors, Nick said. I do, however, do deals. So, you want me to say yes when you convince Alice to ask me to go shopping with her? Then I want a day.
A day?
Yes. One 24-hour period in which you promise to stay the hell out of my thoughts. No peeking, no listening, no popping in. On your honor. One day,
Nick said.
Agreed,
Mary said, with some slight hesitation.
Then consider it done, Nick said. Assuming you really can talk her into asking me, of course.
91. Pale pink or off pink? Alice asked, holding up yet another pair of nearly identical shoes.
That depends. When you say your father is coming to town, is that slang for your daddy or your handler, as some girls call them?
You're inferring these shoes will make me look like a hooker,
Alice replied.
And they say the blonde ones are all looks, Nick said, with an unfazed grin.
He wasn't sure how Mary had talked her into it. For that matter, neither was Alice. But Alice had been convinced that Nick would be an acceptable shopping substitute. So, instead of spending his evening relaxing and planning for the weekend, Nick was stuck on shopping duty. In truth, he'd been down this road many times with many girls, but he found that if they knew you didn't mind, then they felt encouraged to bring you along more often. That much, at least, he wanted to avoid.
I know they aren't perfectly high class, but I thought with the dress I picked out it wouldn't be pushing the envelope too much,
Alice said, defending her selection.
You thought wrong. If we were going out to a bar with our friends, I would say no problem. If we're talking people with actual fashion, then I think we both know you've gone over the line of class,
Nick said. Alice sighed.
Damn it, you're right. I hate you for being right.
Long as we're hating me for appropriate reasons, I think I can cope,
Nick said.
You know this means I have to keep looking, though,
Alice warned him.
Nick spread out his hands. I've got all night, princess.
Nobody for me to impress tomorrow, so the room can stay messy and the clothes piled up. In truth,